Welcome to Honey, I'm Homeschooling the Kids, a podcast that steps into alternative education, parenting, and living a funner, fuller family life. I'm Robin, home educator, unschooling mom to two funny, eclectic kids, and we're here to create a space for families to listen, connect, learn from others, and be inspired. Join us every 2 weeks to hear interviews and tips from experts in learning, education, and parenting, and stories from families that are playing full out in the arena of life and education. World schooling, unschooling, alternative schooling, homeschooling, or just creating a whole new style of learning.
Welcome back to the podcast. And right now we are going to do Read the Reviews. I'm absolutely loving this podcast. Robin is a talented interviewer, and I'm finding so many new resources for our unschooling journey through the wide array of guests she is having on her show. Thank you so much for this podcast. Keep it up. Thank you. And that was by SLMeg09. Thank you very much, SLMeg09. My mom enjoyed that. Who did you interview in this episode?
I interviewed Jody Cook.
And why did you interview her?
Jody actually got in touch with me a little while ago, and she wanted to share her amazing book series that she created. It's actually under the title of Clever Tykes Books. And she had actually sent me some copies of her books that Ronan actually read and reviewed for me and sent her the review. And I thought once I read her books as well and looked her up and found her amazing TED Talk, I knew she was a great fit for the show.
Okay, so that sounds pretty good.
Really, her podcast or her, sorry, her TED Talk was a defining reason as well. Along with the books that I saw that she was creating something great. And when I found out more about her, you know, she's a young entrepreneur. She's created her own social media company. She co-wrote these series of storybooks, which is really the key is developing positive, resourceful, and creative behavior in young kids. And now these books are read in every primary school in the United Kingdom. She got them in every school in the United Kingdom. And her goal, which she talks about in this podcast as well, is to really get them throughout the world. Especially her next target is North America and Australia. And she definitely has a great request for us to help her out on this. So her idea of learning and the importance of the word enterprising and entrepreneurship is one that's important in her life that she's got a great definition of. And she's just got so many great tidbits to share with us.
And don't forget to contact my mom if you have any questions or you want to write a comment. You can find her on Instagram and Facebook at Honey, I'm Homeschooling the Kids.
Yeah, I have one more thing to say as well. Sometimes I get a chance to present to families, to homeschooling families and to others. And I do have a remarkable event that I am presenting at, which will be coming up this May the 28th in Edmonton, and you can check social media to learn more information about this. I will be sharing this on Facebook and Instagram as well. But the event is called One Last Talk, and it's based on this question. If you were about to leave this planet, if this day was your last day, what would you say? And who would you say it to? And this provocative question is at the core of this remarkable event. There will be four speakers in total, and I get a chance to be one of those speakers presenting my one last talk. If you would like to hear this journey, if you'd like to share in this evening, you can contact me or you can go to the Eventbrite page, which I will also share on Facebook as well to get your tickets. This is a small event. It's intentionally intimate. So if you'd like to learn more information, contact me. But the one last talk that I'll be speaking at will be held on May the 28th in Edmonton. And that is all.
Enjoy the episode.
Okay, so today I have Jody Cook joining me on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today, Jody.
Thank you for having me.
Jody is actually joining me all the way from Birmingham, England, from the UK. So I'm pretty happy about that. Jody is the owner of JC Social Media, a team of 16 social media managers based in Birmingham, UK. She co-founded Clever Tykes, a series of children's storybooks inspiring enterprising behavior, which are read in every primary school in the UK. She won Birmingham Young Professional of the Year in 2014. was included in Forbes 30 Under 30 Social Entrepreneurs in Europe 2017 and won the 2017 Entrepreneurs Champion at the Great British Entrepreneur Awards. She also competes for Great Britain in powerlifting. Thank you very much, Jody. We can talk about powerlifting after as well, too.
Cool.
So if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, are you born and raised in Birmingham?
Yes, born and raised in Birmingham. I just turned 30 and then Birmingham's my base camp, but then I travel around quite a bit and I try and spend about half of the year working from different countries to feel like a local there really, and to explore and get to know people who live there and then just see the world whilst working. So Toronto's been one of them actually, and Vancouver as well, and hopefully Montreal soon, and then maybe we'll get to Alberta, who knows. we pick a country and then spend a month exploring the city there.
Oh, fantastic. So you come to Canada often. I didn't know that. That's really great. Okay.
Yeah, I love Canada. It's such a magical place, and you can get, there are so many things within Canada. It feels like if you lived there, you would never need to leave.
Yeah, it's a really great place. And you're always welcome to come and visit me in Alberta. Absolutely. Okay. It's a bit of a trek to get to my place. I'll let you know first, but you are always more than welcome. It'd be a unique Canadian experience too. It's not anything like Toronto, Montreal, or Vancouver when you come up here. So you have your social media. How old were you when you started JC Social Media?
I was 22 when I started JC Social Media. So I was fresh out of university, and then I'd been on a graduate scheme for a year that was actually in social care. So I went from social care to social media, which is probably not really a step that a lot of people take. But I knew that I wanted to work for myself, but I wasn't setting out to start myself a business. I was more setting out to, I guess, create myself a job. And so when I started trying to win clients, it wasn't because I wanted to build this big agency. It was just because I wanted to do work that I absolutely love to do and do it from wherever I wanted to in the world and just work with really cool clients on really cool projects. That's how it started when I was 22. And then I built it up from there to the point where I had almost like a full-time job's worth of work. And that's when I hit the crossroads of, do I carry on doing this and do I be a freelancer and just kind of do it this way forever? Or do I start hiring people? And that was when I took the step to start hiring people.
Okay. And do you still have 18 staff, or has it grown even more?
So it's grown from, it's 18 at the moment. It started off just me and I was working from like my spare room or various coffee shops around. And then about a year in was when I started hiring and then got an office. And then we've been building up, and we kind of add a new account manager whenever our client hours warrant it. And then we've got a really cool team now who all have the same attitude towards work as I did when I first started, which is they want to work on social media projects for different clients, and they want to do work that they love, and they want to do really fun things.
And I was thinking as well, when you start a company, it's one thing when you are working for yourself on your own, and it becomes a whole different ballgame when you start having staff as well. And I know a big thing is, you know, goals and objectives, beliefs in life, work attitude and ethic all come into play as well. Has that worked fairly well for you with everyone that is working in your company?
I think so. Hiring can be challenging because you're trying to make this judgment of someone from like an hour for the next, like, I don't know, 1, 2, 5, 10 years. And that can be very, very difficult to do. And I guess that's the reason why recruitment is such a big industry, because putting people through the kind of rigorous testing that means that you get someone out the other end who you really, really want to work with and will represent your clients and do the work to the standard that you want. I mean, it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenging process, but I've been very lucky to work with some absolutely amazing people who are very conscientious and will always kind of put everything into their work because they want to do it for themselves, for the company, and for their clients as well. I think that we'd always hire someone for their attitude and for their enthusiasm and for their commitment to learning over and above their like current knowledge, because we just think, well, we can train people in how to upload things to social media. We can train people in how to run Facebook ads and lots of the stuff that we do. But actually the attitude, the enthusiasm and that like hunger to learn and to do better, that's very, very hard to train. So we've probably changed our recruitment process from the start in terms of like what we look for. But yeah, it just has to be all about that, the person and the individual and how they see themselves like operating each day.
Right. Absolutely. And do you feel that for yourself as well in your life, in your learning life and in your professional life as well, that those are attitudes and values that are important to you?
Yes, definitely.
Commitment to learning and improvement and, you know, those attitudes?
All the time, because I think if you're not learning, if you're not continuing to progress yourself as a person, you are being overtaken because you just can't stay still with it. Because things like we were talking about earlier, the internet moves things along so fast that what works in 1 month might not work 3 months later. And so we just need to keep ahead of absolutely everything. And I'm just aware that I want to do that all the time. And so, yeah, keeping learning from what other people are doing and maybe learning from other people's mistakes, learning from other people's success, reading as many books as possible and meeting as many people as possible are probably the two things that I definitely enjoy doing the most. And just the how excited you get after you finish a book or how excited you get after meeting a new person, I feel like that's the most important part of the learning that I do.
You and I are similar that way because that's what I love too. After I read a book and the viewpoints and information I get and perspective I love, and then meeting people as well. And it's the same, the viewpoint, the information and perspectives that I get from meeting people are, I think, one of my favorite things. And I think that's also why I love traveling as well, getting all of that.
Just different perspectives.
So I think that also, you know, leads really well into, I mean, one of the reasons why I was happy to connect with you and have you on the show as well, because it fits so well, your beliefs in learning that really influence so much of your professional life and really your daily living. And how I know for a lot of people who believe in self-directed learning, who homeschool, who unschool, who, you know, look for alternative methods to educate as well. You've got a great series, Clever Tykes Books, that really fits well with all of this. And could you tell a little bit more about what is Clever Tykes Books and the reason behind the creation of this?
Definitely. Clever Tykes is a series of children's storybooks. There are 4 books currently in the series, along with teaching resources and things like activity packs and different downloads for parents and for teachers. And the goal behind them is to inspire, I guess, enterprising behavior or entrepreneurial behavior. And so what I mean by that is like positivity, creativity, resourcefulness, resilience, and getting kids who are age 6 to 9, because that's the reading age of the books, to just think in a different way. And so maybe before, where they might have given up on a challenge and felt defeated, after reading their books, they might feel like they want to approach it and they want to work out how they can solve it and how they can do better. And so it's all based on the power of role models. And I'll tell you the story about how the books first came about. But within the books, there are basically role models for kids of people who act in that way, in a positive, resourceful, creative way. So what we found is that the kids who read them start to emulate that behavior, and then their parents notice behavioral changes with them, which has actually been amazing to see. I don't think we realized what we were creating when we first put the books together, but it's just all about positive behavioral change. And so why it first came about was that when I was first starting my business, I remember speaking to a lot of my friends about what they wanted to do. And at this time, a lot of them had moved to London to be kind of consultants or accountants or lawyers or something like that. And whenever they talked to me about starting my own business, they all talked about how it must have been this big risk. And I remember thinking, I just never once thought of it as being a risk. I thought it was a bit odd that lots of people were saying, oh, wow, that's risky. How did you take the leap? Because I thought, well, is it a risk? Like, what's the worst that could happen? It'll go wrong and then I'll just get a job. It's fine. And then I just looked into it a little bit more and realized that so much of whether you see starting your own business as a risk or not depends on the role models that you have around you. And so my mom's been self-employed since, I think, for about 15 years. So I grew up just knowing someone who was in business and who just, it was just in her nature to just go and get clients and do the work for them. And it was never a question. So I guess I grew up starting just believing that that was how someone went to work and that was what they did. And so when I spoke to some of my friends about work and their impression of work, their impression of work was just completely dictated by the people around them, by their parents, or by people who they kind of saw on television or their parents' friends. And so that's when it was me and my co-founder, who's also my husband, that was when we hit on the idea of like, wow, this role models thing is really big. Let's create some role models. Let's create some role models to give those entrepreneurial like role models to the kids who don't necessarily have them.
And I think that's, I agree, actually. I think I watched, I don't know if it was on your website or it was elsewhere, I watched a video where it was an interview, or maybe I read it, but it was interviewing young entrepreneurs. And you were talking about that, about the influence of role models and the people around you and how really it creates a lot of your reality, especially going forward as an adult and what you are going to create for yourself. Yes. So I think that's really interesting that your mother herself as well was an entrepreneur. And so you saw how it worked, really. Yeah. I'm sure you would see how it didn't work at times too, which is just as important.
Yeah.
But you had the firsthand of experience of that and really the role modeling of that you could do it as well. And the important, again, attitudes as well to duplicate a successful process.
Yeah. And it was also how she encouraged independence in me and my sister, because what I've only recently thought about is when I was younger, if we were ever going on like a family trip or going away anywhere, from the age of, I think, probably 5, I used to pack my own suitcase. And so it was just what I did. I didn't know any different. It was like, okay, we're going away. Get your suitcase out, put your clothes mm-hmm. in, plan what you're going to wear each day. It was just normal. That's what my mom just got us to do. And it was only just so recently that I realized that actually that's not the case for everyone. But she was just so aware that she wanted to give us that independent streak from very early on. And so her being self-employed even and thinking about like how she kind of thought of how she wanted to get, I guess, develop our behavior even led to things like that, where it was like, nope, go pack your own suitcase. Who else is going to do it for you?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because that's something that my husband and I do with our kids as well. They pack their own bags when we go away. Yeah. It's so I totally get that too. It's, you know, we talk about the trip. They know what it's going to be like. We look up the weather, what would be ideal clothing or what they pack their, you know, extra little things they want to do or whatever. But they have the ownership over that and the independence in that. It's up to them to get themselves ready for the trip. And then, they know what they have in their bag. So when they do arrive, they know exactly what's available for them as well. And it's not, so they you also avoid the coming and asking. Again, it's the independence of, oh, did you pack this? Do I have this? What? Can I do that? You know, it's right there. And it's funny how, because I remember I also watched your TED Talk. Mm-hmm. And if anyone who's listening, please go to Jodi's TED Talk. It's excellent. And you brought that up in the TED Talk too, because it's funny, because I said, oh, that's exactly what we do. And that's what my parents had done as well, right? And something that seems maybe minute and minuscule at the moment actually can be extremely impactful. And that carries on for so many other things in life.
So much. I will be forever grateful. And it was packing my own suitcase. It was booking my own dentist appointments. It was just, I just believe that kids just, they know the answer. If they are left to their own devices to work out the answer, they will come to the right answer. And if they come to what maybe is not the right answer, they'll learn that it's not the right answer. And then the next time they will come to the right answer on their own. And I will be forever grateful to my mom for just trusting that I could work it out for myself.
Right. Yeah. The trust, right? That's the other big thing is having the trust. And that's huge. I think that would be huge when, as an entrepreneur as well, is that trust factor, trust in yourself. Well, yeah.
Maybe it's also like what could actually go wrong? If I packed my own suitcase and then I packed silly outfits, then I might just be a bit cold, or I might look a bit silly, or it's not, I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's not the end of the world. And then you, for next time, you think, okay, well, last time I remember I didn't bring enough sweaters and it got cold. So the next time you pack, you know what? I remember this happened, so I'm going to do this time. You know, it's, again, learning from those mistakes, too. It's funny because I was interviewed on another podcast. Rachel Rainbold is her name. She has a podcast, Sage Parenting. And this exact topic came up because we talked about travel as well. And adventure was the theme of my episode that she, when she had me on. And she does the same thing, too. Her kids pack for their trips. And we talked about, you know, sometimes, if you don't pack right, so you think, okay, next time I'm going to change this. This is what I'm going to do for next time. So this doesn't happen again. So, yeah, there's so many lessons in that.
I really are.
And I know in your TED talk as well, you know, that's also one of the big things that you talked about in that TED talk is, you know, you brought in the idea of the structure of our education system. And, you know, preparing for independence and working for yourself and learning, self-directed learning, and how so many times this is not happening and how you feel it's not preparing us. The education system currently and how it's structured isn't preparing us for the rapidly changing world today. Can you talk a little bit more about this? Do you still agree, or do you think there's been a lot of improvements made and everything is fine now?
I don't know if it's the same in Canada as it is in England, but the goal of primary school is to do well and get to secondary school. The goal of secondary school is to do well and go to university. The goal of university is to do well and get a good job. And everything is set up for each establishment to achieve those objectives. But if you think of what the world of work looks like and the growth in the gig economy and freelancing and people being able to start their own, well, the internet being the great leveler that it is that enables someone who's 12 to set up their own business. We're just going into a very, very different world of work than we were like 10, 20, 30 years ago. And so I guess I question whether we are actually preparing people in the best way by essentially teaching them to pass exams. Because if you teach people to pass exams, you're teaching them to think in a very linear way, because you have to fulfill a mark scheme. But then the problem is, if you don't have a mark scheme, it becomes almost like a joke lesson or a lesson that doesn't really matter, because the students know that it's not going to be marked. So I think teachers do a fantastic job and can have it very difficult. But overall, it's like, what is it that needs to change in order to make sure that we are preparing people for the future world of work? And so much of that, I think, comes through reading, comes through parents and attitudes and the role models that they introduce their kids to. But I love that there are so many different models, like homeschooling for a start, and homeschooling consortiums, whereby there's like different moms and dads who teach kids certain subjects. I just love that there are so many different ways to teach people things, because the most beneficial things to kids' education are often not the exams they take and the lessons they go to, but it's the places they go to and the people they meet. And so it's like, how can we get education to include all that stuff, but not be at the detriment to the child? Because I think with every time you change something, you get a small generation of kids who are the test beds. And so you don't want to ruin the chances of one generation just because you've been testing in that year. It has to be like beneficial to them as well. So I think the education system's got a big challenge on its hands. But what we're trying to do with CleverTykes is kind of put resources into the system, which hopefully help with a lot of the challenges.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because with education, it's such a big, I think in any country that you're in, it's such a big behemoth of an organization that sometimes I think you have a lot of people involved in it that want change and see that there needs to be change. But to get that change going can be a very long, slow, bureaucratic process.
Yes.
And, you know, especially with the way our world is moving so quickly now, I mean, in the internet and technology, I think really the world's always moved forward, but it's moving at an even faster rate now because of our technology. So to keep up with that, yeah, it gets difficult, because really it's essential to be dynamic, I think, in your learning and education. And I agree that, you know, sometimes, you know, yeah, it's there's sometimes you want standards. So, for example, there's Sir Ken Robinson talks about this, where he says, you know, if you go to a doctor, you want there to be standards in the medical profession where, you know, they, you know, when you're going, you know, OK, they are able to do this and meet this, and they've been, you know, proved themselves successful in this way. But at the same time, not everybody is a testing person either as well. Some are really good at writing tests. Sometimes tests are really essentially so much it's about memorization and just that certain material, but not necessarily knowing it enough to apply it in a practical real life manner. And I think that's also when it gets hard, when we leave school and, you know, so much of it, the learning becomes about experience and applying it to what you're doing at the moment and what you need to know and learn. And so many times we relearn, or just relearn for the first time, what we need to, because that's what we're using at that exact time.
And I love Sir Ken Robinson's TED Talk, Why Schools Kill Creativity. I think that's the most watched TED Talk of all time, but I think it's absolutely fantastic. But education does really have a job on its hands to keep up with the world of work. And I even remember when I went to university, I started doing a business management course in 2007, and we had some marketing modules in place, but we, like, social media and digital marketing was not mentioned once. But then that's what I did 4 years later. And so even in that short space of time, education's moved on that much that there's a whole module in my degree that just wasn't relevant.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's happening all over education. So I feel like for the future workforce and for the generations who are going through school and education at the moment, to succeed, it's about being resourceful, and it's about saying, okay, so I'm going to go to university and learn about marketing, but they're not going to teach me about how to do digital marketing. So therefore, I'm going to use the internet to learn that. I'm going to use YouTube. I'm going to go on courses, and being the person who's hungry for the knowledge and will find it elsewhere if they're not getting it from the traditional education process.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, being hungry for the knowledge.
Yes, which you can teach, I think. I think getting people enthusiastic about learning is something that you can instill in people from a young age.
Absolutely. And I also think that, and I mean, you can disagree with me, or I don't know, but that sometimes is what becomes difficult with an abundant amount of testing, is because that hunger for learning isn't always necessarily stoked when it becomes, I'm doing this just to pass the exam or to get an A, but I'll cram to try and get this, not necessarily to, sometimes you need the time too to think, okay, well, how else can, you know, what can I create with this? What can I do with this? I'm going to go off in this direction because I think this is extremely interesting and I want to learn more about this. But you stop yourself because, you know, I've got this exam in 2 days that I really need to, you know, get ready for, and therefore I don't have time to go off and learn more about this other thing or other subject. So that hunger starts to be tamped down.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I think about it, because I remember when I went to school, there were people who loved exams and they really thrived thinking that they could, I guess, apply the knowledge, but sometimes it was just apply the memorization. Maybe it's a relief. Maybe it's that they look forward to exams because they could take all the memory tricks that they've learned, put them all down on paper, and then just forget them all and never think about them again.
Well, can I ask you a personal question? How about you when you were going to school? Were you a big exam taker? Was it difficult for you?
I think, I don't know. I did English for A-level, and I loved English exams because it was just like 3 hours of writing lots and lots of stuff. But then I don't remember enjoying like maths and economics exams, and ones that felt like it was just symbols on a page and it didn't actually mean, I don't know, I preferred the wordy stuff. So, but maybe that's because it was linked more to applying your knowledge and writing things, and also that it was a long period of time that you were tested over. I don't think I really liked the 1 hour shorter exams where you had to really quickly just answer a series of questions. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah, the difference. Yeah, absolutely. I get that too. I was more of a English language arts person in school, or I thought I was anyways. I did okay in like my maths and sciences, but I definitely enjoyed English more. But it's interesting too, because now with home education with my kids, I actually really enjoy math, and I never thought I would have. And that's been a really interesting change for me. And also, I think, you know, in some ways, redoing it or doing it a different way with my kids, I've learned concepts that I realized I never fully understood before. And by having it in a different way and method and applying it in a different way, it changed. It really has changed my belief in like how I am with math. So that's been for me as an adult now, that's been a really big change in that too. And talking about that with my kids as well, that, you know, yeah, that it's been different. That's been one of my big learning experiences in this process.
I bet your kids benefit so much from you enjoying teaching it as well, because so much of whether you enjoy a lesson or a subject depends on the enthusiasm that your teacher puts into it and how much passion that they've got for it, because it's very easy to mirror the passion, and then it gets quite infectious. So I think that when I look back at school, the lessons I enjoyed the most were definitely the ones where the teachers were just really excited about what they were teaching.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I also think sometimes it's, I hope my kids really understand this, but I'm sure they see this, that I also am just learning along with them. Some things, yes, I understand, I can teach to them when they don't know, but a lot of it I'm like, okay, I need to do this again because I'm not sure I really understand this, or they get it before me and I'm like, okay, can you show me how you did that? And, you know, and then it's, you know, and then it changes. It's different. It's very interesting in that way. So yeah, there's so many things and I think also that applies to the learner, the individual learner, because everyone learns in different ways. So to test in one way limits a lot of learning abilities as well.
Yeah. And not everyone learns the same. Not everyone takes the information they've learned and puts it out there in the same way. And people think differently as well. So yeah, to test everyone in the same way doesn't seem to make that much sense.
Yeah. 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 We have a long way to go, but I think the great thing as well is that there are many alternatives now, whether it is different, structured schools, homeschool co-ops or homeschooling, different alternative schools. And there's those options, which I think is important, and that they're accessible as well. And then bringing other options into the school. Like, you know, that's why I think that's great what you're doing with Clever Tykes Books and having that resource and that different way of approaching things as well in that series.
Because all the resources that we've created are all... they're kind of question based. So we've got the storybooks, and then we've got storybook walkthroughs and guides, which just encourage the teacher or the parent who's taking the kids through the book to ask questions at certain times, which will just start those discussions. Mm-hmm. So it might be, one of the characters is called Cody, and the book's called Code It Cody. And it's like, well, why has Cody done that? Why did he say that? Why did he do that thing? Why did he let that person in front of him in the queue? Why? Like, it's all these questions about what he's done and why he did it, which then get people thinking about the actions that they are taking themselves, and then helps put them on the road to the enterprising behavior that we're looking to get to.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So also with those resources, and I know because we have two of the books, thank you very much, that you had sent. And I told you my son had read them as well, and he'd wrote the review for you too, which we're going to post on Amazon too. He really liked Code It Cody. I remember I told you that one. That was the one that he liked the best.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's a good, it's absolutely a good one. If I'm a parent that goes to Amazon or to your website to order those books, are those extra parts of like the questions and the other teaching tools, is that all on the website as well?
Yeah, they're on Amazon. So we've got a story guidebook, and we've also got an activity and coloring book. And so, yeah, they should be available all over the world through Amazon as well to accompany the books. So definitely.
Okay, absolutely. So that's easy for any parent to go to and find and purchase then. Okay, yeah. Good. Okay, perfect. So then, you know, part of the book as well is, I mean, you talk about confidence, persistence against the odds, resourcefulness, teamwork, and persistence when faced with a challenge as well. I know some of the books that we have, those are the key themes that that appear throughout the book. And a lot of this is linked with, I think as well, entrepreneurship, enterprise. How would you define the word enterprise?
I guess enterprise, like, I guess enterprising behavior is being able to, yeah, it's all those things, isn't it? It's like resilient, it's confidence, it's being able to see a problem and get to the solution in some way. And I also think I see enterprising behavior as being staying calm under pressure. And if you are faced with a difficult situation, being able to just like take a deep breath and go, okay, what do I do now? And then that helps develop the resilience that leads you to making the right decision over kind of getting in a bit of a flap. So yeah, and so many of those traits are really useful in entrepreneurship, because it's, you might be going into an uncertain market, you might be stepping into like an unknown way of working with people who you've just started working with. And so enterprising and entrepreneurship is all about being able to absolutely think on your feet, but have the confidence in yourself that you can deal with it, that whatever is thrown at you, you can absolutely deal with it.
Right. Absolutely. I really like how you said it's also staying calm under pressure.
Yes.
That, you know, that's really important. And I actually did not think about that at all but that's a huge point, because I think sometimes you think with enterprise, it's about the creativity. It's about, you know, it's the action. It's the forward movement. You don't always think about staying calm under pressure, which is still such a huge important part.
I think it's a big part of leadership, and entrepreneurs and people who start businesses are leaders, essentially. If they've got a team of people, if they've got people who they are responsible for, then their role is also in developing those people to be the best they can be and do the best work they can do. So to me, being a leader is being that person who will always be thought of as staying calm and knowing what the right thing to do is. And if I can teach the people around me to also take a deep breath, think something through, and then make the right decision, then that's developing their personalities in the right way as well. And that actually happens in Code at Cody, actually. Cody, I mean, I don't want to give too much of the story away, but one of Cody's teachers gets in a bit of a flurry when she has like error messages coming up on her computer, and Cody's very good at staying calm and saying, okay, well, let me look at what this error message means. And then he works out what she can do next while she's sort of, she's not having a great time really. But the fact that Cody just thinks in a very logical way, I think is a behavior that we could all look to emulate.
Right. That's right. So for as parents, how can we, or are there some other ways as well that we can support this behavior in our kids, or support enterprise?
Yeah, I think so. So we worked with a lot of teachers and parents, like when we came up with the resources, and I love hearing the stories of what other parents do. And one of my favorites is that if they're in a store with their kids, if there's a long line, or I think Americans and Canadians call it a line, we call it a queue. But say if there's a long line.
Both Americans and Canadians call it a line. Yeah.
So if there's a line, it's not just about waiting in line and, you know, playing on your phone, like passing the time. It's about going, well, why is there a line? Why are all these people in front? What could the store do? Is the store making the best use of all the people it has available? Is it, like, what's the, just asking the why question all the time, and then getting the discussion going about, well, there's someone there not doing anything who works here. Could they open up a new till? Has the store recently had a promotion that means that more people than normal are there? Is there like a local event going on that means that the town's busier? It's like having those discussions and just working out how the world works just by asking why. And then another parent who we spoke to said that one thing that they do is they don't pay pocket money at regular intervals. So If you pay pocket money.
Just interrupt for any Americans, Canadians, North Americans who are not sure pocket money, spending money or allowance. Yeah.
Yeah. So like an allowance that might be paid monthly, it just conditions people to receive that set amount every month, which is very much like a salary. And so if we assume that a lot of the kids that we're raising are not going to go on and have jobs, they might be freelance, or they might, I don't know, run their own company or something, chances are they actually won't be paid monthly. So why would we get them used to doing things that way? And I quite like that idea. I'm not sure many kids would be happy at not at being surprised. But there were other ideas that they had in mind, which was to do with earning rewards for like chores they did around the house, or kind of coming up with their own ideas of how they could like budget for what they needed to buy. So just different ways of thinking about things, really, that don't have to be the traditional way of doing them.
Right. So can I ask you, were you paid an allowance, or were you given pocket money when you were a kid?
All I remember is having to write like almost like a proposal for what I wanted as pocket money, what I was going to spend it on, and how often I wanted it. I definitely remember putting that together. Interestingly, I also wanted a dog, and I was tasked with putting together a presentation on why I wanted a dog, who was going to walk the dog, everything like that. And I didn't actually end up getting a dog. I don't think my presentation was good enough. But my cousin Harriet had to do the same presentation, and she ended up getting a dog. And I find it hilarious that now she's 23 now, I think. But she went off to university, and her parents had to pick up the dog walking rotor that she'd put in her original presentation. So I think she won in the end.
Oh, that's too funny. Holy, that's pretty resourceful though as well. I like that your parents.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, look at what it's created for you now and how you use those skills, putting yeah. together that plan, putting together that presentation. That's a yeah. good idea.
Me and my little sister wanted a rabbit, and I remember my dad bought us a box that could have been turned into a rabbit hutch and a book on rabbits. And then what we found is that was enough. We didn't actually want the rabbit. We just wanted to learn more about them. And he realized that because he had this box. He had all the tools to make it into a rabbit hutch, but we never really followed him up about it. And it's like actions speak louder than words, really. So he just thought if we wanted it that much, we would be persistent. And if we didn't, then it wasn't the right decision. And I think he was right in the end.
Right. Interesting. That's actually really interesting, because then again, it's like I think of I had a former guest I had on, John Lanza, and he has the book The Art of Allowance, and his platform is really teaching kids about money and financial awareness. And one of the things he uses with his kids and he recommends is if they say they want to buy something, or they want to, with their money, he says wait a week. So if, his child says, oh, I really want this, I really need this, it's like, okay, you want it, find out how much it is, find out, all of where you can get it, but then wait 1 week. And then after a week, he returns back, says, okay, so you really, really, really wanted this. Do you feel like you needed it this week? Do you still really, really want this? And he says, it's surprising how many times that after they wait, and then they're, no, actually, I don't really, the mind has changed. It's, yeah.
If I'm online shopping and then I've got a basket full of stuff, I'll just click close and close the whole window and then just leave it, and then only go back if there's something that I really can't stop thinking about.
That's actually a great idea for all of us.
It rarely happens, yeah.
That's actually a great tip, actually.
Yeah. But the trouble is with the internet, with remarketing, those items just follow you around the internet.
Yeah,
but then it serves as a good reminder, and it does start the thought process again. Like, do I really want that? And often you don't. You can get just as much joy just from looking at it as you could from buying it.
As you can actually have, yeah. That's true. That's very true. And it is interesting too how that has changed how we can close it and walk away, but then it does follow us around as a reminder of yes, you really wanted it. Here's a reminder how much you wanted it with the internet and. All of that as well, all the, how they can, what happens in marketing in that way now. So it also becomes a really important process of, understanding what you really need and want, and that power of mindset too. And being able to say no, I think, sometimes too.
And I wonder if the power of marketing and the power of internet marketing especially even more strengthens the case for why we need to teach kids to be resourceful and to think for themselves, because there are social media platforms designed to keep people on them forever and to be like candy dispensers. And so the more we can teach people to think for themselves, the more that they can override that and spend their time how they want to and be in charge of their own decisions and their own mind.
I think that's a huge thing in our day and age as well, especially when kids younger and younger have access to social media and their own social media. And, you know, that they're targeted, obviously, as well. I mean, they are a buyer. So that's a huge, in being able to really understand that is a pretty important thing to do. I agree. I think that is important. So even with that, too, I mean, bringing Clever Tykes books into the schooling system as a resource, how has it been received? How, teaching that mindset or that resourcefulness, the persistence, and even sometimes being very aware of what you need and want and sometimes the action steps to take. How has that been received for you?
They've gone down really well in schools. Well, when we decided that we were going to try and put the books in all 24,000 primary schools in the UK, we thought rather than trying to get them to buy the books, we're going to find a sponsor to gift the books to every single school, along with the resources as well. So the schools received the storybooks and the teacher's guides as a gift. And so what we found is that all the schools use them in different ways. So some of them are in the library, and it's up to kids to check the books in and out of the library. Some of them are used in like maths lessons and English lessons to accompany different exercises and theories that they're learning at the time. But mostly they're used in what we call like PSHE or citizenship or those kind of lessons. So they're not, they don't have exams, they're not necessarily marked, but it's for learning about like social skills and learning about mindset and all those kind of things. So they've been received really well. And probably the biggest indicator is that in the back of each book, we've got an email address of each character. So we have so many kids and mainly kids, a few teachers, actually emailing the character, asking them questions about their journey and about the venture that they're on. And we get so many people asking them how old they are. Are they real? where do they go to school? And I've had people asking like what their favorite fruit is or what their favorite vegetable is. And I have to remember the backstories that I've created for each of the characters to make sure that every kid who emails in gets the same response back.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Because you say you can send an email to Cody, for example, and cody@clevertykes.com,
yeah,
where you can email Cody directly. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. So I think an indicator of how they've gone down is just how the volume of emails that we get through those email addresses. It's really nice to see that someone will finish the book and then go through and they want to know more about the story. So who knows, maybe that will turn into like spin-off stories for each character. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. A YouTube series, maybe?
Maybe. Who knows? Yeah, I don't know. We were thinking, so we wrote another book called Bake It, Benny. And this was about, so a boy who was really, he was just really interested in like cooking and baking around the kitchen. And he started to make like custom kind of birthday cakes for his friends' birthdays. And he turned that into a venture of his own. But then we realized that Bake It Benny and his objectives coincide, like really didn't match up with Change It Chose, who's all about healthy eating and replacing cake and sweets and crisps with fruit and vegetables. So unfortunately, Benny got the chop, but you never know. We might bring him back and he might make courgette cakes or something like that. So we incorporate healthy eating into it as well.
Did you say courgette cakes?
Yeah, you know what? Have you seen that?
Zucchini. We call it zucchini here in North America. So if anybody's wondering.
I saw a cake recipe once where zucchini was in it, and it tasted really good. So there are healthy ways of doing even cakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Beet cake is a really good one.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
Chocolate beet cake.
Yes.
My dad's Jamaican, so a lot of the British terms I'm still familiar with. My husband and I used to live in Australia, and my brother lives in Australia. So, so that's why I'm I'm familiar with many of the British terms, the terminology that you're using.
So. We just have funny ways of saying things, I think.
Oh, or else we have funny ways of saying things, depending how you look at it.
Well, I thought, actually, Australian ways, Canadian ways, American ways, and English ways of saying like pavement or footpath or sidewalk, I find really fascinating because each of them describe the same thing just in a different way. And I think it says quite a lot about how each different country thinks about things, because we call it pavement, which is to do with what it's made of. Americans call it the sidewalk, to do with its position next to the road. And then Australians call it the footpath, which is just feet going on path. So it tells you quite a lot about each different culture.
Yeah, absolutely. The same language, we all speak English, but yeah, that's exactly. I know one word in Canada that no one else uses, but for us, it's a very common word, is toque. And it's really like it's obviously we take it as a French word. It's a Quebecois word, but it's like a hat, but you know, a winter hat, you know, like I'm trying to think. I can't even think of how anyone else would use it, but we just use the word toque. That's a very common word for us. But obviously with our weather, it's a very well-used item of clothing.
Yeah.
So most people, when I see me talk about toques, don't know. You've never heard toque before?
No, never.
Yeah. That's the beautiful complexities of our world and the differences, right? So many similarities, yet the subtle differences that we have based on where we live. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great thing about travel, again. So, Jody, can you tell me how, because I know your next vision is to have, for Clever Textbooks, to reach schools and kids across the world. What kind of help can we give you to do that?
Well, at the moment, what I'm working on is finding sponsors to do exactly the same as what we did in the United Kingdom with the books going to all 24,000 primary schools, finding one for America, one for Canada, and one for Australia. So that's 95,000 elementary schools, 10,000 elementary schools, and 8,000 primary schools. So yeah, if you speak to someone who works in CSR or marketing for a company that has social mobility at the forefront of what it wants to do, then absolutely send them my way. It would be amazing to speak to them. In the UK, the sponsor we secured was Lloyds Banking Group, and so their kind of slogan was helping Britain prosper. And so everything that they were doing was fitting with that, and teaching kids about enterprise and behaviour and how to be positive, resourceful, and creative was helping them prosper in the future. So it fit in perfectly. But I know that they won't be the only ones who are focused on that message as well.
Okay, we can definitely do so. If anyone that is listening as well, that's what we need. Sponsors in America, Australia. Sorry, so Lloyds Banking, their slogan was helping them prosper in the future?
Helping Britain prosper, yes. All of their operations and their vision for everything they do was all about how to help Britain prosper. And so the storybooks perfectly fit into the vision of what they wanted to help primary school children do.
Okay, absolutely. Okay, that's what we will look.
Let's do it.
Fantastic. Yeah, let's absolutely do it. Okay. I love that. And then if we want to get a hold of you, can you please tell us how we can do that? If a sponsor wants to reach you, how can they find you?
Through clevertykes.com or jodycook.com are the two websites that have both got contact forms on. And I would love to hear from anyone who's listened to this podcast, just their thoughts or anything. Especially about how they raise their kids to be positive, resourceful, and independent. If you've got any tricks and tips, then I'd love to hear from you, and then we'd be able to write them up into blogs and things. And it's always useful for parents and educators to hear about what other ones do.
Okay, fantastic. We can do that. And Clever Tykes is spelled CLEVERTYKES.com.
Yes, that's right.
And then Jody Cook is JODIECOOK.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, wanted to meet. I'll also add all of that information to the show notes as well. So if anybody wants to go directly to the show notes, and they can find those links on there too. Three things that maybe I can ask you if you would like to remind us of or leave us with. One is enterprise and all of those amazing behaviors we talked about with enterprise, resilience, staying calm under pressure, confidence in dealing with things. Is there anything that as well that you, another way that you would suggest or anything else that you would recommend or resources even you'd recommend for parents that want to help encourage and support that behavior?
So while you've been asking me that question, I've actually thought of an answer to your first question.
Okay. Perfect. Let's go with that then.
So yes, I wanted to tell you about my favorite Greek word, and that word is euthymia, and it's spelled euthymia. And the reason I want to tell you about it is because it underpins so much of what I do, and I also think it's such a nice grounder for being able to kind of plan your own journey. And so the word is from Seneca's Essays on Tranquility, and it means believing in yourself and trusting in the path you're on and not being in doubt by following in the myriad of footsteps of those wandering in every direction. And I think now more than ever, it's so easy to be distracted. It's so easy to look at what the journeys that other people are on and feel like, I guess, feel envious or feel like you should be doing that or compare yourself. And really, none of it matters. It's about looking at other people for inspiration, but not to copy. It's what's so important is coming up with your own journey, your own version of success, and then following that through and sticking to it no matter what. And I think I find it really useful just to think about all the time, just to have confidence in your own journey. But I think as kids are growing up, and as they start to think what they want to do when they grow up and what they want to be when they're older, it's just so important that that is their decision and that nothing else has to come into it other than for inspiration and learning. So it's euthymia, and it's my favorite word ever.
That is, that's actually just great advice for me today, even as well. And I think that's fantastic. So I wonder, how do I pronounce that properly?
Euthymia.
Euthymia. Okay. And it's euthymia. Okay. Euthymia. All right. I think really that sums up all the questions I was going to ask you. I think it ties it all in perfectly together. Euthymia. I love that. And that's Seneca's Essays in Tranquility.
Yeah.
Is where we can find that. Okay. Are you an avid reader of Seneca?
I just like his stuff. I just like the way he thinks. I guess him and Marcus Aurelius as well, because like the kind of Stoic philosopher type people just have such an amazing way about like thinking about the world. Yeah, I read as much of it as I can.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, because even just everyday reminders I find are so useful, especially, and Marcus Aurelius as well. I agree. Actually, that reminds me, we have one of his, we have this book on the bookshelf. I'm going to take that out after and leave it out to reference as well. And actually, I'll include those in the show notes too.
Okay, brilliant.
Thank you, Jody, so much. This was great.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks so much for having me.
It was my pleasure, my absolute pleasure. And I also recommend anyone listening, look for, if you can even just Google to TED Talks, put Jody's name in, watch her TED Talk as well. You will love it. And you actually gave us great resources to reference along with Clever Tykes books to clevertykes.com. We really enjoyed it. And I think it's a great, great enterprise that you have going on and will help spread the word as well and get some sponsors.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please share, leave a review or comment. I'd love to hear your thoughts, ideas, and reflections on the episode. You can go to the website, imhomeschooling.com, or email me directly, robin@imhomeschooling.com.